once I get into work, I don't have any patients that never heard back from him, and I don't have his number.
All right. Well, I'm working on somebody. We'll work it as we go.
I am Memphis, Tennessee. I am everything Hollywood wants to be. I am love and I am hate. I'm your late night talk to baby, but you never put your finger on me. Have you ever seen the sun over the Rocky Mountains shining? For such the sands of the southern Florida beach. Have you seen a grown man cry or a child that's slowly dying? Have you looked inside to see all that you can see? And I am North and South Dakota, New York City. I am everything Hollywood wants to be. I am love and I am hate. And the critics can all debate, but they'll never put a finger on me.
Hi, this is your Rabbi Razzle, Rich Bergeron. We're coming at you with another live edition of the Fight News Unlimited Combat Sports Show. And don't really have any confirmed guests yet, but we're working on it. We are getting a guest one way or another.
Rich, as we were discussing today, I know you sent me the email I got this morning when I got up. We were going to try to get Joey I on the phone. For anybody up there in the Philadelphia area, the name Joey I is getting rather popular. He's a trainer. He's a cut man. He's now doing his own promotions. And he pretty much does it all. And and he's one of the really good guys in the sport. I met him a couple of years ago. He is my good friend Chuck Mattaccio's cut man. And I've even seen his, and I'm going back about 5 years, 6 years now, so I'm sure his son, Vinny, who also named after Vinny Pazienza, boxed an exhibition. I think he was 6 years old at the Blue Horizon back in, I guess it was 05, him and another little six-year-old. But it had the Blue Horizon, for anybody that knows the venue, as I do, the ring is a very small ring. It's a very... and I hope they open the Blue back up. But it's a very small ring, and it's very, everything's like tight in. You feel like it's claustrophobic, which is always a great ring for a guy like me. Being the fact that I'm a short guy, and but watching 2 6-year-olds in that ring, it looked like it was gigantic, and it was actually very entertaining. I do have a lot to go over tonight in the boxing world. So, we got a lot of good stuff to talk about, guests or no guests.
Hell yeah. We got a big fight with Tim Bradley and Devin Alexander.
Big fight this weekend. Before we even get into that fight, which is, a very much a marquee fight, two world champions, when you say like world champions, like these days, you might get a guy winning the world title that is obviously, at a lower echelon. You look at the Ring Magazine rankings, which is who's uses my I use our Ring Magazine as my barometer of the sport. Was your cat meowing at me?
He's debating you.
Yeah.
Speak cat. You don't get Tom. All right, go ahead.
I was saying I use Ring Magazine as my barometer of the sport. And I remember other times, like you would get a guy who would be a quote-unquote world champion, one of the big four, and would not even be ranked in the top 10 of the division in Ring Magazine. So, thinking of looking at my latest episode here, but in fact, Ring Magazine owes me an episode for issue. I'm getting a little impatient. What are they sending to me? As of their rankings a few months ago, they had Timothy Bradley number 1, 26-0. Devin Alexander number 3, 21-0. Now, during that time period, Amir Khan had that life and death fight with Marcus Madonna. So now, very good chance that Bradley and Alexander are 1-2. And both undefeated fighters, somebody's O has got to go. It's a fight that should be for the vacant Ring Magazine Junior Welterweight Championship. But I got to put the money on Bradley. He's a better technical fighter. Alexander's obviously the harder puncher. He's a one-punch knockout of previously iron-jawed Juan Urango a few months ago. It was very impressive. He blitzed him with an uppercut. But Bradley, he just does it all well. He's short, he's compact, keeps his tight guard, does everything right, and I think his superior technical abilities is what's going to carry him to a, I think it's going to be a unanimous decision win. I don't think he's going to stop him. He may in the late rounds, but I think it'll be the scorecards that he prevails on.
Probably.
Now, we also got a very, very, very interesting fight on tomorrow night, ESPN2, between two of our former guests. Did you hear about this one?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
My guests.
Tomorrow night on ESPN2 will be Chris Areola.
Yeah.
We interviewed Chris, I guess it was back in, it had to be 2008 because I was only
co-hosting.
Yep.
Correctly. I think it was 1931. No.
1931. I don't think I've been a co-host of the show that long.
It was 100 years ago. No.
Yeah. But,
I don't know when it
was. Yeah, I did interview Chris back in 2008 when I had only been co-host for a few minutes. And he's going to be fighting Joey Minnesota Isabel, who we just interviewed a few months ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, Chris Areola is going to be the favorite. He is ranked in the top 10. He fought for a world title. The two losses on his record, the stoppage loss to Vitaly Klitschko and a decision loss to Thomas Adamack. The only two guys that have beaten him have been legitimate world champions. Joey Abel, very much a power puncher. He's a southpaw. He's going to come at you all guns blazing. So it's quite very entertaining. Two guys that are, not going to hold anything back. And I was even reading the paper today. A lot of it, they're speculating on what kind of shape Areola comes in. If he comes in, 255, 260 or above, that gives Joey Abel a very good chance. Areola comes in good shape, keeps his weight down. Obviously, that gives him a decided advantage over a fighter that's more of a brawler than a boxer.
Right. We shall see. I don't know. It's a tough one. Did you know Mosley is vowing to shock the world with knocking Pacquiao out? Do you believe him?
I did not read that, but once again, it does not surprise me.
Yeah. He says, it's overrated that he's on his way out. People don't know what they're talking about when you say that. They don't understand how I'm going to knock him out. He said he has to go toe-to-toe against the 32-year-old Pacquiao in Las Vegas on May 7th. Definitely going to be in shape. You can expect Sugar Shane to be in great shape, he said. And, of course, he's coming off of a couple of disappointing losses. It was kind of funny. I was watching the UFC event, the Fight for the Troops, and a lot of people jaw-jacking back and forth. I switched over to the Holyfield fight at one point when there was a break.
You did? I'm sorry to hear that.
The Holyfield non-fight. The no contest.
Yeah.
No, but I switched over to that, and everybody's talking about Mayweather and Pacquiao in the freaking chat room area. I was just like, give me a break. And it was just, that's all they wanted to talk about. And that guy, Julius Long, 7 feet tall, he just, like, pushed the top rope down and stepped into the ring.
Mm-hmm.
It's the shittiest box I've ever seen at that. I want to see him fight the big Russian guy.
Valuev,
yeah. I want to see that fight. Just to see that dude get pummeled. He has no jab. No. He almost got knocked out by that guy.
Long.
Hard to watch. And then Evander got his head cut out. So
I don't know if you heard the unfortunate news coming out of St. Petersburg, Florida about Jeff Lacey's brother, did you?
I did see a whisper of something about Jeff Lacey's brother. What was that?
Well, very, very sad. Jeff Lacey, a former world champion, very much a class act, a good guy. His brother, not so much. His brother, guy that's always been in a lot of trouble, difficulties with drugs, violent-tempered guy, obviously not on the same class level as Jeff Lacey. He's a reported sex offender. So we're not talking about a good guy here. And just a few days ago, I saw the listing on the Internet that there was a shootout in St. Petersburg, Florida. And I guess cops were going after him, and he was holed up in the second floor of a house, and he came out shooting and sadly killed two St. Petersburg police officers before getting shot and killed himself. So, but, you know, very, very sad day for the Lacey family, but more sad, more tragic is the loss of the, you know, two police officers, you know, in the St. Petersburg area.
Yeah. So that was a shootout they were talking about. Two cops died?
Yeah.
Well, on a good note for boxing, there's an MMA fighter in Nightingale. Nick Diaz. You hear him?
Nick Diaz? Yeah, I heard him.
Strike Force welterweight champion right now, I guess. And he's been very vocal lately about wanting to receive better payment for fighting. And his coach and manager, Cesar Gracie, recently told ESPN that he might turn to boxing soon in search of a big payday.
Wow.
So boxing is dying, huh, MMA critics?
Yeah, right. Yeah, he doesn't treat it, you know?
What's that all about? And that's especially relevant considering the UFC is throwing so many people out. You know, if that's their number one competition and they can't even pay a copy, you gotta go to boxing. Who's the boss now? And they're in negotiations right now with Don Chardon. And it will probably be at super middleweight, 168 pounds. Diaz has competed once as a pro boxer, taking out Alfonso Roca by unanimous decision back in 2005.
What else I heard is making the switch to boxing for mixed martial arts.
What?
I heard there's another top name fighter that's making the switch to boxing from MMA.
To boxing from MMA.
He's going to boxing from MMA. Heavyweight. Want to guess the name?
Who is it? Kimbo?
James Lights Out Tony.
Again? He's going to do another fight?
No, he's going back to boxing.
Or is he going back to boxing?
Yeah. He's going back to boxing from his stint. He's very successful a minute and a half in mixed martial arts.
You're right. You couldn't get him to get the bait. Take the bait the last time he went out in public and made a fool out of himself, too. Try to crawl out fucking Rampage Jackson there. That was a little ridiculous. Yeah. Show how low class he was there. But anyway.
Yeah.
We'll see. I don't know if he has anything left in boxing either, but he showed he really didn't work out that much for that fight.
We were talking about a minute ago. I was looking it up when we were talking. I did look up that Julius Long,
yeah.
And I did see him fight live once and in person. It was about one of the worst fights I've ever seen. Fighting a guy by the name of Derek Jefferson, who was fought for a world title. It was ugly. It was sloppy. It was a horrible fight. It ended, Jefferson won the decision after 8 rounds. There was a cut that prompted the stoppage, which the crowd cheered just because nobody wanted to see this fight anymore.
Yeah.
Another thing, we did you last month with two fighters, or earlier this month, I should say, with Yusuf Mack and Otis Griffin. They're kept on hold again.
On hold?
I don't know if you heard about that, yeah. That fight, we interviewed them, I think it was like a couple days or a week before they were going to fight. I think we interviewed them, and they were set to fight like the following week. And it got postponed. It was supposed to be from January 7th to February 4th. Now they said it's indefinitely on hold. I guess there's a promotional squabble or something or other.
What the hell is going on? So how much snow did you guys get down there in Philly?
I got over a foot.
Over a foot.
It sucks. I hate it.
You know, we've had 3 blizzards in the Nor'easter up here already.
And I heard we've got a minor. We've set up for another blitz next.
Yeah, guess what, though? Best advice I think I ever got about boxing training was when I was leaving Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and I met this Mexican guy. He said he had a lot of fights, and you know, you could tell by looking at his face that he fought. He was very clear. You know, he had no problems with his speech, whatever. He could speak pretty good English and Spanish. And he said to me, he goes, the best workout you can do for boxing is run into deep snow. It's no coincidence they had Rocky IV set like that, you know. That's the best workout. And I run across the lake twice up here, once with no tracks, and any snowmobiles, nothing. It was snow. And
I was doing Rocky leg working out today. I was shoveling snow.
Yeah, right. You better watch out. Okay. Turn on your heart.
I had to shovel a path to my grill so I could cook steak tonight.
Yeah, sorry for that unplanned commercial break with dead air.
Yeah.
I don't know what
happened.
My computer froze up. Fox Trek was not able to handle the system here. But,
what were you looking at to crash this?
Fox Trek.
I was telling you, man, I saw that Derek Jefferson. You're not going to forget the fighter in person. And I saw him, and like I said, I wasn't impressed back then. Then I remember Samuel Peter knocked him out on 1 round.
Right. Samuel Peter. Yeah, I wonder what he's doing these days. Is he making another?
Actually, I was reading about him earlier. Who the hell was he? They were making fun of somebody. Let me see if I can find it. They were mad. The Peter camp was mad. Let me see if I can find it. They were saying somebody that's going to fight one of the Klitschko brothers is ducking Samuel Peter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, that makes absolutely no sense. See where it is. Just so I can, like, read it to you. You'll get a kick out of it. I was just reading it like an hour ago.
I'm trying to see what we got for the Google alerts. I didn't see the freaking wrestling one. There's a lot of talk around Herschel Walker. In MMA, he's coming back to second MMA fight. I think he's overhyped, but we'll see.
I got Herschel Walker's autograph.
He's a tough bastard. Not quitting.
Oh, absolutely.
In better shape than Holyfield, I think.
Oh, man. Like I said, I didn't see any of that Holyfield fight, but, you know, from what I heard, it was not good.
Oh, by the way, in the Long fight, the Julius Long.
Button there.
Being Kevin Johnson. So it was technically the Long Johnson fight. We were. Somebody mentioned that in chat, and I was just like, oh, man, that's so funny.
Yeah, they said that a whole trip was not entertaining.
But it was interesting. The UFC event recently took some action against the company Justin.TV.
Yeah.
They do the video feeds and shit, and people show free UFC events on these channels. And they say 50,000 people did it the last time they had a pay-per-view. They watched it on there for free. So they sued them. They went to the distance and they sued them. So it's getting kind of interesting there. They're making some bold statements and trying to push everybody around. But I think the company I use is offshore, so I don't have to worry about shit. I don't know.
What's going to happen next week when we go to, premium?
Well, we'll see. We'll see. Well, this could be the very last show on Blog Talk Radio. I'll pull something out pretty soon here. We'll have to go.
Right.
To everything. We do that? I don't know. We have to go premium to save our slot. I know that. That's the one thing we have to do. We also might have to go down to a half an hour show if we just do it on. You think you could do a show in a half an hour, dude?
we wouldn't be able to do any interviews, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, dude, quick hit. All right, question number one, go!
Yes.
You don't know what it is.
Okay, either you do an interview or you do, or you just go over news, because there's no way we'd be able to get them both in.
Yeah.
We're talking about it. We've done interviews over 2 hours.
Right. I got a few days to pull it together, but I think I can make it happen.
Internet. Well, let that be your expertise. You know that shit better than I do.
I think if we go premium,
I would get us all screwed up. I'd get us thrown off the air.
Yeah.
I didn't say anything.
It's a business move for them to do that, just muscle in and be like, you got to be premium or else you're getting freaking cut down to nothing. And your time slot that you reserved to 2015 is means nothing now. You signed up 3 years ago. Come on now. That's bullshit.
That's us.
Nothing's free anymore.
Yeah, I know. They tried to do something like that before, and we got around it.
Well, we do have a guest, apparently. One that has been pulled out of the woodwork. We have Camille Shalrouse's manager we're going to try to call here. And so we're going to meet him. And Camille Shalrouse. On the 29th. So, yeah. We got another phone. Come on.
Gaddick Mixed Martial Arts.
Hello. This is
Gaddick Mixed Martial Arts.
How's it going?
Hello?
This is Rabble Rouser Rich Bergeron. How's it going?
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Do we have Camille?
Did you call? I was just on the phone with Matt Granahan. Did you get a hold of him or?
No, not at all.
Did you try that number that I gave you?
I thought this was the number you gave me.
This is my number, but I sent you another number.
No, I didn't get.
check your Facebook.
All right, there it is. Let me try that one. This is John?
Yes.
Oh, do you want to stay on the call? Are you busy?
Sure. Yeah, no, I'll stay on the call. That's fine.
Oh, tell us a little bit about Camille while we go try to get his number up here.
Kamal Shalrous is an undefeated fighter in the UFC right now. He's former of the WEC, just signed a 4-fight contract with the UFC. He is an Olympic wrestler. He's from Iran, but he wrestled for Great Britain in the Olympics. His brother is the head coach of the Iranian Olympic team. And he's trained with Team Couture. He's trained pretty much all over the place. So he's got a fight with Jim Miller coming up on March. So he's getting ready to, you know, for his biggest test to date in the UFC.
Sweet. Well, we're going to try to get him on the phone. I guess we're going to go through his manager first. And
yeah, I don't know if you can really – Kamal is he's flying outside, so we may not be able to catch him because he's en route to Charlotte, and then he's going to go from Charlotte to come up to me and do a seminar on Saturday the 29th. He's doing a 3 seminars at my place.
Right.
And we're introducing his own martial arts, the Shalrous Integrated Combat Systems, or SICS. It's a combination of check wrestling and striking. So
John, tell us a little bit about yourself before we go any further. I mean, introduce yourself. Tell us about your gym and, you know, what you're all about.
I
interviewed you way back in the day. That's like 2006, right? Something like that.
Matt's trying to get a hold of it. Matt's trying to call in here now. So. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
We're here.
Okay. He's trying to call in here. Did you try and call him?
No, I can try to add him right now. But
okay. Yeah, if you can call him, he's trying to call me.
Tell us a little bit about how you got started and all that, your story.
Okay. Started three. I have three older brothers that were involved in wrestling, and we actually had wrestling mats in our garage, so I kind of got hooked into it. And got into wrestling as I got older. I got out of high school wrestling, got into Golden Gloves boxing, and I was the New England Diamond Belt boxing champion. I was a 2-time finalist in the Vermont State Golden Gloves, and actually at 39, I tried out for the contender show, so I was trying to make my comeback, but that was about the extent of my boxing career. Fell into a situation where I was teaching boxing in a jiu-jitsu studio and was asked if I wanted to take it over, and now it's my mixed martial arts studio. So that's kind of where now I'm coaching fighters. We got guys, actually got a fight coming up at Lock in the Cage in Philadelphia on February 11th. So we got 3 guys fighting in that, and then we got 3 guys fighting on Fox TV in March 26th in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So we got a lot of stuff going on right now.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I'm Rich's co-host. I'm actually a Philadelphia guy. My name's Tony. Where in Philadelphia are they going to be? That's going to be taking place.
I'd be lying. I don't have the information right in front of me, so it's going to sound really bad. But it's a promotion called Locked in the Cage.
Okay.
And Locked in the Cage is the name of the promotion that's holding the fight. Like I said, I'd be lying to you say exact location we're going to be at, but it's actually a pro-am. Event. We've got actually got 4 guys. I'm thinking we got 1 professional and 3 amateurs fighting on the card. So,
with that, one guy comes out, 2 guys go in.
Yeah, something like that.
Locked in the Cage.
But we're pretty excited about it. We've got our team has really just started to gel this past year. We went down to Danger Zone on Dan Severn's card, and out of 4 fights, we won 3, and the guy that lost was. Pulled up Chael Sonnen was basically killing this kid, and he got caught in a triangle at like the last minute of the fight. So we're pretty excited. I think we're hopefully to go and sweep this one, and then we got a pro fight coming up in April. So we got a lot of stuff going on.
All right. Apparently, I can't call out to Camille's manager. Extension isn't working. I don't know whether it's a number from another country.
Let me see if by chance I can conference him in. If I lose you guys, just call me right back. Because he's calling me now.
I have a call-in number, too, for the show that you can access.
Okay, hang on 1 second.
I mean, dialing music. John, I think we interviewed him way back when we were on a MySpace page. One of those things we've been meaning to catch up with him for years.
You guys can't call out to him?
No, we can't.
I got his number right here. You can only call one phone, but he's gonna call you?
Yeah, I tried the call, it says call failed.
Did you call 803-546-8284? If not, I'll take your number, I'll text him and then I'll
send it to me on Facebook.
Okay, I'll send it to you on Facebook. I'll be back.
All right,
I'll call you guys. You guys call me right back because your number is not showing up on my caller ID. So.
I got a guest calling number for the interface for the show.
Okay, what's the guest calling number?
It's 347-324-3228.
Okay. Let me get Matt to call you, and then you guys have, you know, you can call me. You can just call me right back when he gets a hold of you.
Okay.
All right, cool.
Right. So there you have it. Well, I think we talked about the Fight for the Troops event that we just had this last Saturday. That was a pretty good event, as MMA fights go. Did you get to see any highlights of that day, Tony? Big MMA fan?
Yeah. I can't say that I did, Rich.
It was a pretty good show. One of my favorite emerging fighters is Matt Meathead Mitrione. It's like him and Roy Nelson are like peas in the pot, I think. They're such incredible, funny-looking guys who have a funny way of fighting, but they're effective, you know. And they're both heavyweights, of course. And Meathead broke his hand on this guy's face. It was an amazing fight. We knocked him out with a straight left. Got some heavy hands. It'll be interesting to see what he does in the heavyweight division. He's already 4-0, I think, in MMA and all UFC fights. So, never know what's going to happen with him, but I think he keeps improving. So he never gasses out, really. He's going to be a good fighter. But, we had the main event. Evan Dunham lost to Melvin Guillard. Tooled him up on the feet, you know. Actually hit him at the last second with an illegal knee. No points were taken off. The fight was already pretty much over. I think he hit him with a couple of knees and then just went to the ground and pound pretty much on the strike, on the feet striking to ground and pound. And that was it. It was a pretty good card overall. Not bad as three fights go. My email ID has been awarded 1 million pounds in the British Tobacco promo. Can you believe that, Tony?
What?
Did you hear me?
I can hear you now.
My email has been awarded 1 million pounds in the British Tobacco promo.
Tobacco promo?
Yeah, dude.
Any more disgusting than American tobacco?
It's a scam. It's one of those Nigerian scams. Like, I'm from the Nigerian bank. That's why I have a Yahoo email address. Send me your contact information.
I'm hoping Nigerian to have this invisible or unknown backer with $10 million, and they're going to share it with you.
Uh-huh. Oh, yes, your relative just died in a horrible accident.
Yeah, right.
$25 million to give you. Please provide your identity so we can steal it. So we have a caller on the air?
You go ahead, man.
We got somebody?
Yeah, I'm here.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Now.
Yeah, John Shattuck from Shattuck MMA asked me to call. You guys have this number for the. This is Matt Granahan from American Combat Association.
All right, so you're associated with Kamal?
With Kamal Shalarush, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about him. What's going on?
We do the seminars and the Shalarush Integrated Combat System, which is the like a hybrid submission wrestling based fighting system. And John, who had asked me to call you guys, he's doing a seminar with us on Saturday. He's got three sessions. We've been up there before, and we're going to be certifying his school. It'll actually be the first school in Maryland to be certified under the system. Done seminars all over the world, Italy, England, Switzerland, Texas. It's Texas is really big. That's where Kamal lives, where I used to live. And Kamal's came out of Olympic wrestling. He was a junior national champion in Iran for freestyle. And then in 2001, he was national champion for Great Britain and then represented Great Britain in the Olympics in 2004. And then went from there, from freestyle wrestling into Abu Dhabi and beat Hellboy Hansen when Hellboy was world Shooto champion. He beat Sal Ribeiro. Sal was top ranked in the world for BJJ. And then went into mixed martial arts. And he's fighting, he's still undefeated. He's fighting Jim Miller at UFC 128 in Kamal. Runs the American Combat Association with me to do things like we're doing this weekend with the seminars up in Maryland, and that's pretty much it in a nutshell. We're excited to go back up there. They got a great school. It sounds like you guys know John Shattuck. He's got a really good academy over there in Maryland in Sykesville in the Baltimore area.
Yeah, he was way back with us. I think when we were just like a little MySpace page, we interviewed him.
Cool.
And did a nice story on his background, his history and stuff.
Yeah, he's a good guy. He's got a good school over there, and he's growing a lot. He's going to be expanding. I don't know if you guys have been there, but he's going to be knocking down the wall and adding some square footage. I don't know if he's finished that project yet, but I know he's working on it over the holidays.
Yeah, I don't know. What was it? What was that again?
What's that?
I'm just trying to get John back on the call, actually.
Okay.
So, Camille's going to be... Kamal. Kamal's going to be fighting in the UFC.
Yeah, he's fighting Jim Miller at UFC 128. I was undefeated in WEC. We fought Jamie Varner at the belt. Fought Bart Palaszewski. Fought Kerr and Jansen. And coming out undefeated from WEC into the UFC, into the biggest stage of them all. The Ultimate Fighter song.
I think I'm trying to call it on. Anyway, well, we got a little bit about John. But tell us how you guys first met each other.
John Shattuck. Well, we were promoting our system, and John expressed interest in it. I think he had found us on the internet through our website and through our Facebook, and he expressed interest in it, and he called me for more information, and we ended up setting up a seminar with him over the summer. That was the first time that Kamal and I had met John, and he's got a really good, had a great attitude, good academy over there, and he's growing, got some good local fighters, so it's a good spot over there.
You got your back, John?
I'm here. Can you hear me? Hello? Can you hear me now? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, you got me. Okay, cool. Can you tell? Speak louder. No.
Well, we got you loud and
crank
clear.
Up the volume on my phone.
All right.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I said that was the Ultimate Fighter song there. On your voicemail,
yes.
Man. There is no substitute. There is no substitute for what's in store. Bear witness to the fitness of the modern warrior.
There you go.
That's right, man.
Are you going to sing tomorrow night at Buffalo Wild Wings, man? Are going to be karaoke
definitely.
There?
I'll be definitely going karaoke there.
Nice. We got a little meet and greet. We're going to be putting out Kamal tomorrow night at what's the name of the town? Westminster, like the Westminster Dog Show. Right, Westminster. The Buffalo Wild Wings, and what time does that start, John?
Well, I think we're planning on Kamal getting there about 10 o'clock, so.
Yeah.
It should be about.
Yeah,
by the time he gets up there, we're going to kind of get up. You guys are going to arrive here, and we're just going to shoot right on up. So.
Cool. Yeah, depending on time, we could even go straight there. We got some cool stuff that we're bringing with us up there. I'm going to bring a book, too, try to sell some copies. Did you ever read the, Bones, did you ever read the book I did with Eric Paulson?
Me?
Yeah, have you read that yet?
I have not read it yet.
I'll be bringing a few up there with me.
Cool.
And Matt?
Yep.
Matt? Tell us a little bit about how Kamal is making the transition from the WEC to the UFC. And is he wary at all of, a different atmosphere that he's going to be facing? Like, is it more pressure on him to fight, put on a show and all that?
Well, he's always kind of takes that attitude of wanting to put on a show because his takedowns are really, really strong. That's probably one of the strongest parts of the game. But he prefers to stay up on his feet and brawl. He loves to entertain the crowd and go out there and brawl. And
right.
I think with Jim Miller, who knows what it's going to be like, but he always seems like he doesn't fail to entertain the crowd. He even did his fight with Jamie Varner. He even threw up his arms at one point in the fight and roared out to the crowd and went like, ah!
Yeah. Well, speaking of Jamie Varner, too, he was released, and there was five fighters released on the last UFC card, so that's why I'm noticing more of a trend on our show, but guys, even in winning efforts, they might not be hanging on by more than a thread in the UFC. And after this merger,
Kamal's real fortunate. Kamal's real fortunate because Jamie Varner got cut. A lot of the guys got cut there from the WEC.
Whether you lose 3 out of 4 or you just didn't put on a show that night, you're thrown.
The whole deal with the merger is the lightweight division now is probably the most stacked of all the divisions, the 155-pound division. Kamal used to fight 170, used to fight welterweight, and
when I was in Texas, he was always a welterweight fighter. He was 170. He has two belts, actually, 170-pound fighter that he won in Texas and shows Supreme Warrior Challenge, King of Combat. But when he went into WEC, he made that deep cut to get down to 155. And, you know, that's the thing. I mean, he walks around at about 185, 190. Used to, you know, now he's a little leaner. But you know, he's making a big cut there to go out at 155. So he's a big 155.
Right. Powerful.
When trouble comes.
From all the years I did wrestling, three or four years there, you know, I always recognized that when you cut weight, you were a much better fighter, you know, as long as you did it the right way. But, you know, when you got to cut 10 pounds.
I mean, I used to coach wrestling. I had a different opinion about that. When I coached wrestling, I always was kind of against weight cutting. You know, it's extreme weight cutting. If a guy's focused on nothing but cutting weight, he's not really trained. But Kamal is such a high level that it's not a big deal for him. You know, he's able to maintain the high level of training and cut weight simultaneously.
Yeah, we talked to a guy last week, Anthony Rumble Johnson. He's notorious for having cut up to 40 pounds before a fight.
Rich Franklin, he cuts a ton of weight. You know, a lot of those guys in UFC cut a ridiculous amount of weight. You know.
Now, what do you guys both think about the trend in the UFC? Have you noticed that there's a more of a trend for stand-up and, you know, like I said, they have to put on a show, and these fighters are starting to respond. Fighter bonuses and the whole the pressure cooker situation that this merger's creating.
That's what it's all about, man. Got to keep the fans. Got to keep the fans entertained. But I mean, from a promoter standpoint, but from a fighter standpoint, you want to do whatever you have to do to win. Like Gray Maynard, you know, he's got the right attitude. You know, he knows how to win fights. He might not have the most crazy, exciting fights, but he knows how to win. But the promoters are they can't deny guys that are really good that don't put on real exciting fights. Like Anderson Silva, he was criticized for a long time for not putting on really exciting fights. But yet, you know, you can't.
When you play air guitar in the middle of the ring, I'd say that's not very exciting.
Yeah, I hear that.
Well, it you know, a lot of the guys get the problem of lay and pray, where they just take the guy down and lay on top, and you know, if you got to do what it takes to win, but if you're not going for submissions, you know, it does get boring. So I think, you know, people want to see that you're striking. You can't really do boring unless you do like the traditional boxing where the guys are just hugging each other. I mean, you gotta move around and you gotta strike the guy, which is mainly, it's like a street fight when they do it in UFC. Unfortunately, I think they're getting better, but a lot of the guys just aren't that good strikers, I think. You know, just come from a boxing background, I'd like to see better. More
fighters shouldn't lose a fight for the sake of putting on a show, you know. There's no reason to risk losing a fight for the sake of putting on a show, you know. But at the same time, they're gonna book Dana White's going to get behind the guys that are exciting.
Right.
Well, there's bonuses, too. You know, you get bonuses for fight of the night and knockout of the night. And, you know, actually, Eve Edwards, who's a big-time veteran of the sport, got two bonuses the other night. You get $60,000 in extra payment for mission of the night and fight of the night. So I think sometimes it's good, but other times, you know, when you give two bonuses to one guy, it kind of begs the point, like, why don't they just spread that love around and pay one, you know, every guy couple thousand dollars more, you know, instead of, like, dropping it all on one guy.
Other guys got to step up, I guess. They got to be just as exciting. I guess you could if you're going to say, hey, we're going to do knockout.
The thing I worry about, I mean, maybe I'm being too much of a worrywart about it, but what about that? Does that encourage, you know? Does that encourage you to be more violent as a fighter? You know, why don't they just let these guys fight their games? Why are they going for, you know, giving them a bonus for a chance?
I think you get
paid for performance, too. I mean,
right.
You know, it's just like
the value
an
of it.
Position
it
or anything.
I don't know whether it's good or bad. That's my question. You know, you think it's good or bad that the game's going that way?
I think it's good because, I mean, you see a lot of boxing matches. You know, again, I hate to bash boxing. I love boxing. I came from it. But you watch a lot of the fights, they've lost a lot of viewership because, you know, guys start hugging. And, you know, granted, it's longer fights. But, you know, you get two guys holding on to each other the whole time. But if they know I got, you know, I get an extra 10 grand, 20 grand, 50 grand if I knock somebody out, it's going to step up the pace. And if you know if you get knocked out of the night or you get fight of the night, you're going to get a bonus. It's going to give you an incentive. What incentive do you have if you're getting a $5 million payday and you can hold on to the guy the whole time and still get paid? What bonus do you have there? You don't. So I actually agree with that. I think it's, you know, you want to give somebody incentive to do better.
Yeah.
That's Dana White. Dana White's been doing that for a while. He's been throwing those bonuses out there for a while.
Well, it just seems to me like it's starting to really show that it's working in that respect of making more exciting fights, just this attitude of running, the way he runs it, you know, throwing these people out.
I got a question for you. What do you think is the most exciting UFC fight ever in history, most exciting?
I just got to go back to Stephen Bonner and Forrest Griffin.
I don't agree with that. I got a different pick. I don't know if you guys ever saw Clay Guida and Tyson Griffin fight. I think that was the most exciting fight ever, especially for grappling. And that's what made it exciting. I mean, talking about...
Well, actually, I kind of make the for the Gray Maynard and Frankie Edgar fight, too. I thought that was the best five-round fight I've ever seen, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, this last one, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Clay Guida and Tyson Griffin, not Gray Maynard and Tyson Griffin. Did I say Gray Maynard and Tyson Griffin?
No, you said Clay Guida.
Yeah, it was Clay Guida and Tyson Griffin. That fight was awesome. It was crazy because they were always going for stuff. They were always going to finish for submission. I mean, it was almost like, I don't know if you ever seen the chess match, like the Kazushi Sakuraba, the Carlos Newton fight from Pride from years ago. It was like a grappling chess match like that. It was a good one.
We don't talk a lot on the show, but you know, you're familiar with Pride, obviously. What do you think about their absence now? You know, does that really affect the whole scene?
I miss having Pride. The thing that I always ask, I always wonder is, you know, Dana White, he bought the name, the Pride name. He didn't get the guy, but he got the name. Why not put on some Pride fights in the ring? He's consolidating everything. Instead of doing that, why not keep the Pride
brand
going?
The short answer or the long answer?
You know, what he could do, here's an idea I throw out there. They haven't done it in a long time. He could do a Pride Grand Prix openweight tournament in the Pride ring.
Right.
You know, that'd be crazy. That kind of mixed things up a little bit, you know?
Well, what happened was, here's the story. I mean, I actually consulted with the lawyer that Pride hired to sue the UFC. He called me up because I'm kind of an expert on the subject. And they know the inside people, the players who were all involved. And what the UFC did with buying Pride was they needed to get a loan for like $900 million for their, or $350 million for their expansion and giving themselves dividends. So they went out there and they said, we also have to buy Pride, so we have to set aside $65 million for that. And their whole idea from the very beginning was to tell the people that own Pride that they were going to do that. They were going to co-promote. They were going to do the Super Bowl with MMA. But at all times, their real plan was to just kill it and strip it dry and move on.
Buy it and kill it. That's what happens all the time. Yeah.
Because it was their biggest threat. It was their biggest threat to taking over the scene. And it really was the last organization to really compete with them, the market share for fighters, for all that. And they were starting to come to Vegas, too. So it was getting dangerous for them. It was getting to be too close of a race, and they took out the
Yeah, yeah. I mean, That makes an awful lot of sense, and that's great insight. I never knew that. I miss Pride because you know they still have Japanese fighting organizations like Dream and stuff, but it's not the same, you know. Pride was huge. Pride was bigger than UFC. Pride in its
and the owners of Pride. I mean, this is as bogged down as it was in controversy and all the mob ties that they talked about over there in Japan. You know, it was a very legendary organization. It could have continued under them. They would have continued it, but they got a great offer, and they got a promise from the Fertittas and Dana White that they were going to continue it. And that's what they sued over. They ultimately settled that case, so the UFC must have known that they were going to lose in the long run. They paid it off, and that was that. And went away.
When you look at Japanese MMA, and if you go, you know, when Pride was still in business, still operating, there were more organizations that thrived in Japan. Like here we have Affliction, and we have, you know, we had WEC, but they were one company with UFC. But in Japan, you had Shooto, you had Pancras, you had, you had Rings, you had Pride. You had so many more organizations, you know, that existed. And what I think now with the problem that's happening here is you don't really have as much competition. Like John Shattuck, Bones here on the line, he watches Affliction, but I don't get Showtime. So I don't watch Strikeforce rather. But I don't watch Strikeforce because I don't get Showtime. And you really can't find a bar where you can go and watch it. And watch Strikeforce. And then Affliction, you know, I said Affliction by mistake, but Affliction went out of business. There's really not that much competition. Dana White's kind of the one-man show for Major League MMA in the United States.
Well, he's kind of, he's done a hostile takeover of the industry, really, and if you think about it. They came in there, it was a tournament format to begin with in the UFC. And they came in there and they changed everything to their liking, but they claimed a lot of stuff as their own that was never really theirs, you know. They put the trademark on the octagon, which was, people were doing that in all kinds of other circuits, and they said they did that. Then they claimed the rules, the reformed rules of MMA, they claimed they came up with them. And they didn't. Somebody else wrote those rules, you know, and they just claimed them. Acted like it was theirs. And you know, people are out even saying that they stole the concept for the reality show, The Ultimate Fighter, from somebody else. So, it's like they built it off the back of the sport, and then they've just become the most ruthless players at it. They're the best businessmen with the most money to throw around at it, and it's been successful.
I got to cut off, guys. I got to head off. You still got Matt on there, but I got to go. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'll hang on for a while. Thanks,
John.
Okay. I'll see you tomorrow, man.
All right, man. Bye.
Yeah, you know what I was going to say, too? Back in the 90s, you had Alf Gracie in Extreme Fighting, which existed. You know, you had Hoist in UFC, and then you had Alf Gracie in Extreme Fighting. They were 94. They were around, and they had some pretty. They had Conan, Silverian. They had some pretty good fighters there. And, you know, UFC wasn't huge like it is now. I guess it really didn't become huge. I remember. I was at the show at Mohegan Sun when Rico Rodriguez fought Manny Couture, which wasn't all that many years ago, you know. Mm-hmm. But it seems like so many years ago, because back then UFC was at Mohegan Sun Arena because it was on an Indian reservation. There were hardly any states that had MMA sanctioned, and it was never even thought of that it would be on mainstream TV.
It's just easy to see how far it's come. I remember the one that really hit me was the first fight that I ever saw was on Showtime, actually. It was the debut of, I think, Elite XC on Showtime, back when I was just starting there. And then the first fight I ever ordered on pay-per-view was the Chuck Liddell versus Rampage Jackson fight. And I think that's when the crest of the wave was hitting, you know.
You had Chuck Liddell at the height of his popularity. You know, Spike TV had so many reruns of all his fights. Everybody knew who he was at that point. And, you know, I had heard about MMA when I was in high school, but I'd never seen it, you know. It was always that thing that, you know, you hear the legend of, you never actually see. And then, you know, when I got the writing online, and the internet really started to explode at the same time, too. And, of course, you know, the height of MMA is probably the responsibility for that. That has a lot to do with the internet, because people just share footage of new techniques. And, you know, part of the evolution of the sport takes place online. The media for the MMA is so online-based. I mean, you guys, probably the best example of it is this Ariel Helwani guy. He goes out there and he gets a sideline interview there with Brock Lesnar's supposed WrestleMania opponent.
Who's it?
The Undertaker.
Oh, the Taker.
Yeah, the Undertaker interview. Did you hear that whole nonsense with that?
No, what happened?
Brock Lesnar lost to Cain Velasquez. Of course, we all saw that in the ring. Now, Ariel Helwani is a real famous guy who does a lot of, you know, up-close personal interviews with the MMA fighters. And Undertaker ringside, cage side for Brock Lesnar's fight, right after he comes out of the cage all banged up, the Undertaker looks at him. Brock looks right back at him, and the Undertaker says, you want to do it? Brock just keeps walking away, you know. So the interviewer asks him, what was that all about? And he goes, well, it's kind of personal, you know, it's between us, you know, I just think he needs to train harder. Then all of a sudden the internet world came storming in, and they thought that to mean that Brock and The Undertaker were going to wrestle at WrestleMania. And
WrestleMania,
that whole company
That's
never true. It's never true. They just made it up.
And then it started all the rumor that Brock was leaving the UFC.
Yeah, that's funny.
That's funny. I didn't know that. I hadn't heard that. I know Undertaker.
That's kind of the downside of having too many people stirring the pot. You know, you got people that don't know what they're talking about. They come out there and they say these things and they think these things when nothing could be further from the truth. You know, it's like total bullshit.
Yeah, it was probably a big. It was probably a big ratings boost for Monday Night Raw and all that.
Right. People watching, waiting for that big announcement. Brock coming back. But I kept thinking about it in the perspective of reality, you know. Who in their right mind wouldn't be like, you know, what a wuss. He's going back to WWE because he can't handle the real fighting, you know. Do you really want that to be a legacy?
What's going to happen with, like, Lashley, Bobby Lashley? Is he still with Strikeforce? Because I don't follow Strikeforce. I know he came over to Strikeforce, and he was doing pretty well. He was winning his fights, but I didn't know whether or not
he's not really storming and doing much fighting there. But there's very few guys to go around in that league, unfortunately. That's probably its biggest weakness. There's not too many superstars at that level, you know. And I think they just got rid of one. Jake Shields ended up over in the UFC, so.
Jake Shields went over, and I had heard that they brought Dan Henderson in because they were having problems with Jake Shields, and they thought that the powers that be at Strikeforce thought that Henderson could beat him. They kind of bet on Henderson because they thought Henderson could beat him, and they wanted to get rid of Jake Shields because they knew he was going to go over to UFC, and then he took a big shot in the first round, but that was actually at John Shattuck's house, I think, where we watched that show, because that's the only time I ever saw Strike. That was back in August, and he came back and Jake Shields came back and beat Henderson.
Right.
Henderson. And then the thing I remember about that show, about that event, I can't remember whether it was a pay-per-view or it was like Showtime. I think we were at John's house up there in Maryland watching. Was that Mayhem Miller came out afterwards, and they had a big spectacle in the Strike Force cage where they were all they were all trying to pull Mayhem off of them, and then next thing you know, Jake Shields is in the UFC, and Jake Shields is very talented guy, but if I was to bet on that, I would have thought that Henderson would have beat him, but. I don't know. I think Henderson's he's 40 now, isn't he? 40, 41?
Yeah.
Is he still fighting over there in the Strike Force?
Yeah, he just fought some guy. Kind of embarrassed. I can't think of him. He just beat a real good guy.
He just beat somebody over there.
Yeah, he just had a really good luck. Somebody.
I remember Dan Henderson was qualifying for the Olympics at the same time he was fighting, and he fought Frank Shamrock. You remember that fight? I don't remember what league that was with, but Frank Shamrock submitted, and that was when Frank Shamrock was really in his prime. And submitted Henderson.
Shamrock was the only people to ever beat Boss Rutten, the Shamrock family.
I think that was in Tigris. I wish they'd put, you know what somebody ought to do in MMA? Because we have, like, locally here in South Carolina. I still do some cornering occasionally. And there's a network here called Sports South that does, like, local shows, feeds local shows. But what somebody ought to do in the U.S., is they to compete with Dana White in the UFC, is they ought to do a Japanese, you know, like with Dream, they ought to do like with American commentators, like show the Dream fights, you know, in the States, you know, and make a, you know, just like UFC. I mean, they got like the UFC Unleashed on all the time and all that. Somebody ought to do something like that with an organization like Dream, that's a big organization in Japan. I mean, that's the only, and get it on a real network. Like, I don't want to say Showtime's on a real network, but I just don't have it. Like, put it on like a basic cable network, like Spike, you know?
Right. Well, Spike would never compete with the UFC.
Yeah, but don't put it on Spike. But I'm thinking of a competitor coming in, you know, putting it on a network, you know, similar to Spike. Hey, now, like, Versus isn't going to have MMA anymore because of WEC. Somebody ought to come in, and they ought to put, like...
Well, UFC is doing fights with Versus now, too.
They've
worked that out. They made sure they smoothed that out before they made that transition. But it's not going to be like WEC was. But somebody made the point on another internet site the other day about... it should be minor leagues that are privately owned, but the UFC has control over it. And I was just like, you gotta be kidding me.
Really terrible.
You can't do it. It's just not going to happen. And the UFC wants to be like the NFL. So the last thing they want to do is have a minor league system like baseball. You know, they want to be the NFL. They want to be baseball.
They get their pick of everybody. I mean, they really do have a minor league system in the sense that there's shows all the time, all over the country, every week, every weekend.
Right.
And they have their pick of those fighters, you know. They got Joe Silva scouting those guys. And I mean, they have their pick. Whoever UFC wants. What local fighter is not going to want to fight for UFC?
Right. That's the be-all, end-all, and they've pretty much, like I said, demolished their biggest competition. So,
absolutely.
The only competing leagues out there, they really have to kind of gang up on them to get anywhere, it seems like, sometimes. But, you know, there's more of a call for a fighters union, I think, than a minor league system, you know, because that would kind of equalize a little bit better. And, you know, I hear a lot about these guys that need, like, $3,000 a fight. They have to fight three rounds. It goes to decision. They don't get any bonuses. And, you know, they got to rely on their sponsors. And then guys like the Fertittas and Dana White come in and say, oh, now this guy can't sponsor you. We banned it from the league. You know, and they do shit like that.
You know what happens? You know what happens? You know what happens? And we were dealing with with Kamal was I couldn't get an answer right away from about sponsor money. So we talked to Mike Mersch, who's the UFC's legal guy, and I had to say that they were cool about it in WEC. They didn't charge the sponsors money in WEC unless it was a really big company. But if it was a big company like Tapa, they have to pay Zuffa first before the fighter sees any money. And in UFC, I think it's every company's got to pay Zuffa something before the fighter sees any money.
Right.
You know, and I would imagine Dana White, he's probably, is he opposed to the union, to those guys unionizing?
I would think so, because, you know, he's connected to the Fursitas, and they're notorious for not having unions in their station casinos, so.
Yeah, I imagine there's probably.
There's some history there with the organized crime element, so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their father is actually one of the characters in the movie Casino. I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but.
Oh, the Fursita brothers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have a huge history in Texas. Which was like the original Vegas, before Vegas even existed out there.
He wasn't Joe Pesci. He wasn't Joe Pesci's partner or anything.
No. Wasn't me. He was associated with those people, but he was like the guy that just died is actually a guy that was an actor that just died that played him in the movie. And he only had a couple lines, but there was a character in the Pileggi book talked about him by name, the father, Frank Fertitta Jr. And he got out in 93. There was heat coming down with people willing to talk about his involvement in the whole skimming operation that the movie was based on.
Yeah.
And he was only at one of the casinos at that time, but you know, he had a part to play in all of it. And then he started his own chain and did his own thing. You know, there's so many stories about how he got involved in all this, but his big thing was this Fertitta Enterprises company. That's what he was doing while they were working on their Fertitta.
Dana White's from Massachusetts, and I don't know that much about his story. I know he moved to Vegas, and he was a personal trainer or aerobics instructor.
Yeah, he was a exercise instructor. he left Massachusetts because Whitey Bulger tried to shake him down. That's from his own story.
Yeah.
And he left Boston, went back to Vegas. He had gone to school at Bishop Gorman High School. I have his yearbook photo. Funny enough. High school yearbook, but he had hair back then, and they all knew each other in high school. Lorenzo, Dana, the guy who started Zions, his wife went to the same school at the same time.
So the
Fertitta
brothers didn't grow up in Vegas. They grew up in Mass.
No, the Fertitta brothers did grow up in Vegas, but Dana went to high school in Vegas.
Oh, okay.
When he went back to Mass. He grew up in Boston. Got sent out to Mass. He spent some time in Maine, too, I guess.
So he got shaken down when he was, like, 14 or something?
Well, when he had his boxing gym, so probably maybe when he was in his 20s, I guess, when he was younger. And then he moved back out to Vegas, and that's when the UFC deal ended up surfacing. And he got back into touch with his friends from high school there. And Frank III is, like, a financial guy. He's, like, the most detached, I think, from the UFC. And he shows up at a lot of the events and he's there at the fights, but he seems to be like the most arm's length from running the UFC. It's Lorenzo who was like that part of it. Frank is more of the casino side of it because his father got him involved when he was really young. But Lorenzo is the guy who likes to fight, and likes to, you know, watch it. He's actually a very big boxing fan. I've seen pictures of his house for sale, and he has a shitload of those old photograph black and white photos of boxing. So, you know, that's where his heart is. And he was actually the guy that was on the commission before, so. The boxing commission in Vegas. So that's where his interest always came.
Yeah, I didn't know, I knew that loosely, like, Dana White's story. Who was the guy that had it before? Bob something?
Bob Mayweather.
What do you think he did wrong? That
was a little rough, you know. It was a little like an R-rated movie. You think about it, you know, the risk he took and the setup. And, you know, if you watch the CNBC special about how the UFC rose to fame and whatever, you know, you consider how it happened and the way they were talking about having a moat and a pit with alligators.
Yes,
it's
full of dollars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't
that
know.
Was Horion, that was Horion Gracie, right, that started the that with them, and they wanted to have it as they talked about the alligator pit and all that, and they wanted to, it was definitely that they didn't want to install rounds or rules for a
right.
while. Yeah,
it evolved
like,
they got rid of a lot of the bad stuff. They kept a lot of the good stuff, but I mean, we still get fighters who complain, though, that they didn't keep enough of the bad stuff that wasn't necessarily all that bad. Like, it's kind of funny.
Yeah,
but,
they used to deal with a lot of headbutts in it in the early on.
Yeah, I'm just going to say that. You read my mind. Who was it that told us that, Tony? A couple weeks ago.
Man, if you use not your forehead, but you use your hairline up... up about three quarters of the way with a headbutt, you could beat you and wreck somebody.
Right.
Yeah.
Tony, who was that MMA fighter? You remember?
Which one?
The MMA fighter who said he loved headbutts. He missed having headbutts available.
Oh, the one that was on our show?
Yeah.
Oh, man, no.
Drawing a total blank.
Yeah, so am I. I remember him saying it. And he said, yeah, that's the one thing I miss is, using the headbutt. Because I remember coming out and saying, I'm like, yeah, I boxed for a number of years. And I said, headbutts are legal as long as you don't get caught.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be subtle with it.
Yeah, thinking like Randy, like Randy Couture, for example, he's in a Greco clinch. He's using the top of his head a lot, twisting up the neck. He used headbutts in that position. Yeah, it's a lot easier to slip that in than a punch, from that position.
Right. I noticed totally, though, that this sport is going way more to striking. A lot of these guys are learning to box a little bit better. Chris Lytle, that's who I was thinking of, sorry. Chris
Lakes
Lytle.
Out Lytle, he's a headbutt fan. Yeah, that's
he
cool.
He loves headbutt.
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, there was In the early days in MMA, there were some guys that wouldn't take a striking stance. They would telegraph their shot and try to shoot in. And you really never see that anymore. I mean, Brock Lesnar kind of to a certain degree, but he'll set up with punches too.
And it used to be like you said, what did they do wrong? It used to be more based on, like, whatever skill they would say at the beginning of the fight the guy came from. It was, like, always... started the concept, the idea of putting a wrestler against a jiu-jitsu master. Now, these guys are getting so well-rounded, they got everything in their arsenal. And I think that's why you see a lot of these older school guys who did just have one or two disciplines as their strengths, they're fading away. And these younger guys coming up, they know everything.
they're
messing stuff up.
Yeah, the early UFC, like the very first one, Shamrock was the only guy. Well, there might have been a jiu-jitsu guy in there that wore a gi, a Japanese jiu-jitsu guy in there. But aside from that, Shamrock was the only one coming from Congress that knew submissions, but he never wore a gi. He wasn't, he was a submission wrestler. Jiu-jitsu guy, so he wasn't used to the gi, and then when he fought Gracie, he went for the leg, and he ended up getting choked out with a gi choke. That wasn't something that he was used to. And then I was wondering when Hoist came back and fought Matt Hughes if they were going to let him wear the gi, and I don't think they would have even let him even if he wanted to.
Right.
That shows how the sports evolved. These guys used to always come in with whatever their discipline was. They'd come in with, the judo guys that have a heavier judo gi, and the jiu-jitsu guys would come in with their gi, and they eliminated that. That's not even an option for those guys anymore. And then there was that guy with the one boxing glove, who in the very beginning, the dude that came out with one boxing glove, fought Royce Gracie.
I don't remember that one. I don't think I caught that one. I started watching it, the reruns, or Spike at first. Mm-hmm. I really only got into it in 2006, around that time when I first started Fight News Unlimited. And then once I get into it, I started kind of moving away from watching so much boxing. Even though before then I wrote a lot about boxing and I interviewed a lot of boxers. And my website is still heavily boxing oriented because there's just so much more of a media setup for something that's already existed for hundreds of years. You know, there's a media presence out there. It's been, you know, a favorite sport forever. And MMA is still young. So that empire is still growing.
It's young to it. Yeah, it's young as far as MMA as it's known today. But I mean, go back to the ancient Greek pancration. You know, that's been that no holds barred, you know, submission fighting style's been around for. It's been around since the ancient times. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the UFC MMA today is huge now, but it existed in some form or another, you know, since the ancient times.
Yeah. And that's why I think, you know, they capitalized on the whole gladiator theme, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I mean, they do that in their opening, show opening. Yeah. It really is.
Right?
I mean, you know, the first ever, the first Olympics, the only combat sport was pancration, which was basically, you know, MMA with a little bit less rules and around gloves. And, you know, they tried to bring pancration back into the Olympics. There was a big movement to do that in the late 90s, and it never materialized because they said it was too violent.
Right.
Yeah,
I did want to mention that Renato Sobral was the guy that, Dan Henderson knocked out last Strike Force.
Oh, Babalu. He knocked out Babalu? Yeah, Babalu. Babalu trains with Eric Paulson. I mentioned that Eric's one of Brock's trainers, and I mentioned I have a book out with him that I did with him. It's a history book. We spent two years writing it, and it's not really an MMA history book, but it's sort of a grappling history book. It's called Rough and Tumble. A history of American submission wrestling. It traces submission wrestling from, like I was telling, ancient times through modern day, and it's kind of cool. It shows where each style came to be, the years, how they came to be, you know, and all the way to the modern times.
Yeah, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it'll only grow. I think it'd grow more if UFC had a little more competition. But you know, at the same time, you don't want it to be like boxing either, where there's so many champions, you know.
The only thing I don't like about how powerful they are is, you know, the people that they have associated with it at the top, you know, and the way they can run it. Because they have all the money, they have all the connections and the power, you know, and more people are going to be like them in a lot of ways. They're going to try to emulate them. And they have a lot of policies and people that I don't agree with their tactics, you know. Like Dana White, unfortunately, one of our former guests mentions, Dana White is the most recognizable figure in MMA. And it's not good for the sport.
Yeah.
And you know, he's out there dropping F-bombs and all this, you know, regardless of whether you support foul language or not, you know.
He's
got to have a feeling that the networks don't want him, the CBSs and the NBCs and the ABCs, they don't want him because of that. And even Spike TV, it's like, you know, they got all the man shows and everything. It's like the aggressive cable station, you know. But
yeah, you mentioned
so mainstream because he's so crass. And,
you mentioned pro wrestling, and he's kind of like Vince McMahon, you know, in a way, you know, because Vince McMahon is somebody whenever he goes on a interview, somebody like, I think it was with Bob Costas, he'll get like he'll get all angry and storm off and get a white spot like that.
Right.
If you say something he doesn't
like... Well, the other thing, too, is like Dana's even worse than Vince. Because he doesn't do it for theatrics, you know. He does it for real.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
With Brock,
his personality.
When Brock came out in that one UFC fight, and he said, I almost want to, I'm going to find the video rather than tell the story. But when he went off on Bud Light, he goes, I'm going to go home and I'm going to drink a Coors Light.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Yep.
Snow White, apparently, after that fact, caught him in the shower, literally, and reamed him out. Not physically, but yelled at him, you know, in the shower about that and set him straight. So, no theatrics. This is not the WWE. This is serious shit. And
he's just it's just his personality, man. It's just the way he is. Yeah, I think that Brock had a lot of emotion at that point because he had just beaten down Frank Mir, but Frank Mir still was talking trash to him, and he flipped off the crowd too. Brock flipped off the crowd, the crowd to Bird.
I'm gonna drink a Coors Light. That's a Coors Light because Bud Light won't pay me nothing. And hell, I might even get out of my wife tonight. See you later.
That's good.
That's pretty good.
He's entertaining, man. He seems Brock Lesnar always seemed like he had a bland personality, but he got fired up there, man.
Right.
Yeah, but you're right, though. You're right, though, and I think part of the problem is that people don't realize how many what percentage of people don't take the sport seriously, you know, or even people that don't know the difference between UFC and MMA. There's a lot of people that are like, they think that, you know, a UFC, the name UFC, those letters, I think, resonate with more people than MMA, you know, the sport.
Right.
It's kind of like, it's like MLB, Major League Baseball, the word baseball is huge, but here, UFC is like the brand is what people know.
Yeah, and people go, oh yeah, you like that UFC fighting shit?
Yeah.
MMA anymore.
I've even heard people say like, oh, you know UFC, you know Ultimate Fighting, like a style.
Right. Well, actually, technically, they stole that too because. Over in the UK, that's what they call MMA, Ultimate Fighting.
Ultimate Fight, yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, obviously the UFC started before the Fajitas and Dana White and all that. They didn't invent it themselves, but, you know, that's what they branded themselves on. But it came from somewhere else, like everything always seems to do, you know. So Ultimate Fighting was coined over in the UK, from what I heard.
Oh, yeah.
And they're still using it over there today.
Yeah, and in the history of it, Vale Tudo, too, and... Brazil, the no holds barred fighting with jiu-jitsu guys and the Lucha Libre fighters, and that existed since the 20s, and then you go into Japan and came out before UFC, Pancras before UFC, Shamrock, when he came into the first UFC, he was already a Pancras fighter. You know, people didn't know it in America yet. You know, but then again, he had different rules because they at that time that Pancras didn't allow closed fists. They had the bass root and the open hand slaps and stuff.
Yeah, it was funny. I saw bass root actually. Backstage and everything at a fight in Worcester, Mass. Last May, and you know, he got off alcohol. He was training Kimbo Slice for a while, got him off the drugs and alcohol, and, you know, was a real good role model for people, and was just a very personable guy, nice guy.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot with his career after being done with fighting. Become almost
still,
even more.
Does he still do commentary for anybody? Because he used to do the commentary for Pride. Does he do it for another organization?
Well, he does it for places all over the world. I mean, that's the thing. He's a European guy, so
he's got a lot of other countries. He's got the MMA show on HGNet.
So he's out. He's everywhere, and it's kind of funny. Somebody said, "Boss, I'm gonna drop by you a drink later," and he goes, "Ha ha ha! I don't drink anymore." Everyone tape saying that at the event.
He was known. He was known. The party animal, the ladies, man, a wobble.
Yeah. Big on his kicks and his huge boots there over in Pride.
Boss came out of the Pancras, and Matt Hume is another one that came out of Pancras' trains, Rich Franklin, and Chris Lieben. He got Chris Lieben started on his own school in Hawaii. So a lot of these guys go back a lot of years. They're able to stay in some way connected to the sport full time. Like Eric Paulson, and what we talked about how we do with Paul, what we're doing Saturday up at John's seminars and stuff. And really that came. The inspiration for all that stuff came from Eric Paulson, because Eric is a good friend of ours. Paul and I, we were thinking, hey, Kamal's your fight, you're at the peak now. But after fighting, when your career's done, you can't fight anymore. You want to be able to pass it on. So what Eric does with it, he's got schools all over the country and all over the world. They're certified. He's right here within 100-mile radius of where I am. He's got three schools. We want to build up to that. I mean, not to say that Kamal's thinking about retiring. He's got ways to go, man. He wants to win the belt. But you can't do this stuff forever. You got to have a game plan and exit strategy. And that's probably the best exit strategy for a fighter to have is to do what we're doing with the certifying academy, seminars, and pass it on to the next generation of gladiators.
Yeah, definitely. And, I think it's kind of interesting. We always talk about the boxing versus MMA debate. Who's better, who has better marketing. But the one thing that we got to a conclusion on at the end of that whole series that we did a bunch of different shows on that whole theme. We got to the point where, we pretty much said that both sports have to work with each other, to take the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And the thing that always comes back in boxing is the pay. Pay isn't equal to MMA.
Yeah.
Boxers get paid more. You need to do more for the MMA fighter. But with MMA, it just seems to be the more exciting. The pace of the fights is more interesting because there's more that they can do. So I don't know. Boxing really can't do much about that. But.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot they can do. There's a little side sport that we have fun with in training, and we call it pro boxing, where you spar and you're in a clinch situation, you could throw. So, think about how many clinches there are in boxing. And we just play around, we call it throw boxing, just in training. And that's something that, boxing would never do that, but that's something that makes it a little bit more exciting to the fans when they're in that clinch, if the guys were going to try to go for a throw or takedown.
Well, probably the best point that was ever made in that series about how MMA could impact boxing was this guy Patrick McKelligan, who's a boxing historian. He knew a lot about Muhammad Ali, and he said Muhammad Ali's wife used to be into martial arts. She taught him this thing where
you want to kind of karate chop a guy on the top of the shoulder to target that nerve so he can't use his arm. And if you notice in a lot of Muhammad Ali's fights, it looks like he's holding the guy in the back of the head.
Yeah.
But what he's really doing is he's kind of dropping his hand down on that nerve. And I don't know if it had anything to do with that either, but if you notice in a lot of Rocky Marciano's fights, his hands are open. He liked to fight with open hands, unless he was actually punching.
Yeah.
And that's kind of more of a martial arts thing, too. So certain things work for certain fighters. And there's something to that, I think. You know, like the Bruce Lee one-inch punch was from a straight into a fist. And there's something about that, you know, those little things that you can adapt to boxing and make it more exciting. You know, all kinds of guys have different styles in boxing that confuse people. What's his name? I think Razor Ruddock invented a punch. What did they call that? The smash? The jab smash? It'd be like, you'd go for an uppercut, and it looked like he was going to hit you with an uppercut, and then all of a sudden you get a straight jab in your face.
Or like one thing you never see in boxing really hardly is the MMA Superman punch.
Right.
You know, that's pretty exciting.
I don't know if you could do that in boxing, though. I think we talked about that.
I don't think you could, but maybe if they made that legal, like you're talking about the headbutt. Yeah, the head, like we were talking about Kamal. You watch Kamal's fight. So, you know, not give anything away of what he does, but you watch him, like his last fight with Palaszczuk, and when he's on the ground, he's punishing the guy with his head, not through headbutting, but just driving that head in and twisting the neck up, making the guy uncomfortable, keeping him in pain and making him uncomfortable and kind of grinding him out, you know. So if they were to make the headbutt legal, you got me thinking about that and making the headbutt legal again. Man, that would be.
How about
soccer
kicks
a lot
to
of
the
fun.
Head?
Something
a lot of people miss about Pride.
The soccer kicks to the head that you saw in Pride, Japan, other Japanese organizations. You know, you wouldn't want to go to the extreme of knees to the head of a downed opponent, I guess. But
it's funny, people were always talking about it when Anderson Silva and Roy Jones Jr. were being thrown around as, you know, I guess Silva really wanted to do that fight back before it wasn't an issue. When Roy Jones started to lose, but when they wanted to do that fight, Anderson Silva got told he couldn't do it. But I always said, hey, you know, who says that Anderson Silva can't knee him? You just have to take a penalty point off.
Exactly.
They could just get disqualified. I mean, that's his sport. What happens if one slips, you know, big deal. You know, you can just put one strategic one in and get away with
it. If he gets disqualified, he'll end up looking like the winner, you know?
Yeah.
That fight with Bones Jones and Matt Hamill last year where Bones Jones just dominated him, but yet Matt Hamill here, he had a broken nose and two black eyes, and they raised his hand in victory, but he didn't look like a winner, you know, and his career started to kind of slide. Bones Jones' career, that's a guy that I think, a few other guys in the UFC that I think to look out for that are nasty is Mr. Wonderful, Phil Davis, John Bones Jones. There's probably two, you know, and of course Kamal. But those two guys, man, I think those guys are future champions. Both.
Now tell us a little bit about how Kamal got started. You know, what kind of background he came from, how he got into the sport. Give us his rundown.
He was born in a small farming village in northern Iran and started wrestling as a kid. And from there,
I mean, wrestling was his life. And, he won the national junior national championship for Iran. And Iran and Russia in international wrestling are the powerhouses. He came from that great Persian wrestling lineage. And then from there, he went on to England, and he was on the national team in the world for England, and won their national title, and then represented them in 2004 in the Olympics, in the qualification for the Olympics. He represented England, and then he had a lot of guys in England that were, he was working with some wrestlers, training MMA guys, MMA fighters, and he started working with some submission wrestling, and he said, hey, you know, I want to do this. He went into submission grappling. He went to Bulgaria also and did some sambo training and some catch wrestling training in England. He went into the European Abu Dhabi. He beat Salo Hibiero, who if you guys go to any stores, you see Salo's books. Salo was always a top-ranked, high-level BJJ black belt. He gave Salo a dynasty throw in Abu Dhabi. He also beat Hellboy Hansen. Hellboy was a world Shooto champion. And that was the submission grappling. And then he came to the States, and that's where I met Kamal, the States, in the U.S. He trained in the U.S. with Eric Paulson's fight team, with Neil Melanson and Randy Couture's fight team, with Miletic, Pat Miletic, Miletic Fighting Systems, with Helsing Gracie and Phil Cardello, who used to be in WEC, and when I was in Texas, we trained with Kamal at a Miletic affiliated school, combat competitive training center that they've since closed, and he was won two belts in Texas, and King of Combat and Supreme Warrior Challenge belts, and pretty big organizations in Texas. Then he got drafted going to the WEC and was undefeated there and won several fights. And, WEC beat Kerr Jansen, he beat Bart Palaszewski, Jamie Varner, who used to have the belt. Their fight was declared a draw because Kamal had a point deducted for some low blows. He kicked Varner in the old family jewels a couple times. And
kicked him in the trunk?
Yeah, kicked him in the junk. He had him sing at Soprano. He kicked him a few times in the junk, and had that point deducted, so it ended up being a draw. But he filled, he won it, and most people feel they would have won it if it wasn't for the point deduction. But so he came out of the WEC there and beat Bart Palaszewski at the last show. His Varner fight was the main event for the event up there in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. And then he went from there to UFC. He's got the fight coming up with Jim Miller, who's extremely talented. Extremely talented fighter, and they're going to be fighting at UFC 128. And in the meantime, he's going to be working with me, doing seminars and certifying schools and SICS. We do the American Combat Association, which is the association we use for certifying schools and seminars. Be over there at Shattuck's. Going to be actually tomorrow night. We're driving up tomorrow from Charlotte. We're going to be meeting in Charlotte, driving up from there up to Maryland in the morning. And we're going to be doing a little bar promo at Buffalo Wild Wings, where I think John Shattuck MMA is going to be doing some singing, some karaoke, and entertaining, and he's going to be doing like a little meet and greet and get your picture taken with them all, no charge or anything. You know, come get your picture taken and hang out, and you'll have information out there on table. And Saturday we've got 3 seminars at Shattuck's Academy in Flakesville, Maryland. Morning, afternoon, and late afternoon, 10 a.m. 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m., and go to American Combat Association website, AmericanCombatAFSN.com, and get tickets. At this point, it's probably better you can get tickets, but at this point, since we're a day away, it's probably better if because we're sold out in the morning session, it's probably better just to show up, you know, in the afternoon at the 1 or at the 4 p.m., and come on out. It's going to be a catch wrestling seminar. Kamal's, that's his sort of his forte is the catch wrestling, which is sort of a blending of freestyle Greco and submission from a wrestling perspective. And there's also going to be a little bit of striking in that as well. And that's a seminar as well. A little bit of striking. I don't think he's going to kick anybody in the junk unless. Ticked off or something. unless you talk about shaving your mustache with his boot or something, you probably won't do some Persians. He probably won't kick anybody either. But it'll be mainly the catch grappling focus with a little bit of striking and some conditioning in the beginning, and it's all part of the his system, the Shaolin integrated combat system, the hybrid system that we're certifying Shattuck MMA in, and individuals can also become certified. Kamal's opened up Arte Training Center out in Texas and Austin, and he does certifications out there also. There at the physical facility. It's in South Austin, Texas. There's lodging out there too. And you know, you just go on. If you go on the American Combat Association website, you can get all the information. If anybody's interested in checking out what we're doing and stuff, they can go there. But yeah, man, it's a good thing. The seminars are fun. You know, and Kamal's real patient. He takes his time with the students and works through. I'm going to be helping him, you know, with it going around and we'll show the techniques and then go around and make sure everybody gets the techniques, has a firm grasp of it before we go on to the next technique. And it should be cool. We like doing seminars.
Yeah, it sounds like a good deal. You know, you learn a lot and get to meet some of these. It's got the UFC label and experience.
Yeah. They did a really cool poster for Buffalo Wild Wings that Shattuck sent me. They had like this poster for the promotion, and it looks really cool. It says meet and greet UFC's Kamal Shalaruth. Got a picture of UFC gloves. And it looks pretty cool. So anybody that wants to come out there and hang out, hang out with the Prince of Persia, as Kamal is known, come out and do that, and then come and train on Saturday.
All right. Well, it was great having you on. Definitely sounds like you know the sport, you know the atmosphere there, and you guys know what you're doing. So I'm looking forward to
Thanks for your time. I appreciate it. I like talking about all these different topics and stuff. It's pretty cool. We've been doing the radio shows. There've been a radio shows the last few days. We were on that WNST Sports Talk. We went on Dan Gable, the On the Mat show, and some other ones. MMA Meltdown. MMA Meltdown's really good. most of them we don't get to talk that much about, but we get to hear like at length about all the stuff going on in MMA. That's pretty cool because there's a lot of stuff going on, especially about the MMA sport.
Incredible story. If you don't know it, go look it up. But there's a lot of shows out there. There's a lot of websites out there around MMA, and you know all the different disciplines of it. Of course, have their own niches. But you know, I notice too often there's people that they're just shooting from the hip on a lot of these stories. You know, and they're not bothering to uncover the real facts. And you look behind who owns what, and, you know, where the money comes from, where it goes, who's benefiting, who's not. You know, there's a lot to be suspicious of. You know, so.
I agree.
I'm glad that you're one of those people that sees that, and sees that the UFC and the MMA mix-up is not a good thing for the sport, you know, necessarily. It's bigger than that, you know, and people need to realize that. Without some of these little leagues, the UFC wouldn't be able to function, the way it
and
does.
That's all I mean, aside from working with them all, I mean, it's all I've ever done is, competing in corner and at smaller events, smaller events all over the country, a cool site. It's probably the biggest site that or Surdog, the mixedmartialarts.com is cool. It shows you all the small shows that are coming up all around the country.
But they're notorious for being in the UFC's pocket, It's like,
are they?
They're just pissed off to see here and there, but there's a lot of people that are out and out saying that they're in the pocket of the UFC. They'll count out or whatever the UFC.
Yeah, that's a good point. They may well be, because I think it's a good point. Anytime that the company gets to a certain size and recognition, that they got there somehow. I never really thought about it that way. I just like that site because it lists all the small shows, whereas a lot of a Sherdog, it doesn't really pay on. It only pays attention to the major televised promotions. In the sport, and there's a lot of other ones out there. I mean, what is your favorite site? What's your favorite site to check out? MMA as far as what's going on in the event side.
I don't really have the time these days. I got so much going on. I'm actually a lawyer in three different cases, even though I'm not a lawyer. It's what they call pro se. You know, every time I try to write an important story, I get sued.
Funny you say that, lawyer. Over the summer, I had an experience with the MMA submission ref. I was an expert when I got a call from a lawyer, another guy had referred him to me up in Connecticut, where I'm from. A guy up there had referred me to this guy because they asked him to do it. He didn't want to do it because he was too local. Because they call him, so he called me up, and I was an expert witness on case involving it was involving submission grappling. It was a personal injury case, but it was interesting to see that side of it, that side of the law.
And I say it's like they take it on such an end route, to get to the truth. It's just amazing sometimes, the stuff that these lawyers can get away with and that they're encouraged to get away with to help their clients, and they don't have cases they'll do. It's just been an amazing ride for me. And then to deal with the biggest lawyers in the country out there in Vegas, representing these billionaires and watching what they're doing, it's been pretty amazing. Because I'm involved with a case against the Fertitta Enterprises, with Zions, the sponsor of the UFC at one time, in the middle of the Matt guys. There's a whole bankruptcy associated with that.
Okay.
No. If you do a search, Google search for my name, that's the first page that comes up. Is all my stories about Zion. And they sued me for $25 million and shut me up. Supposedly, but it didn't work. Did not work one bit. I became my own lawyer, and now I'm dangerous. So I got three different cases in three different states, and it's starting to become a little bit fun because I know the system now. And I know how to react and adapt to certain states and how they do it. I've appealed to the federal circuits, and it's getting a little easier. It's not getting more profitable necessarily, but it's getting easier to handle myself in these cases. There's unbelievable power in the courts, but you have to really have patience, and you got to know how to use them to your advantage. But
the problem is the lawyers use it to their advantage too, without thinking of their clients at all. They just want to increase their own fees.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what the game's about. That's what their game is about a lot. When you look at their hourly fee, they just want to rack up the hours.
Right.
Yeah.
They don't give a shit about the real issue half the time.
Exactly.
They're just doing it for the money.
It's all about the Benjamins with those guys. Follow
right,
the money.
Exactly.
It's true about almost anything. If you follow the money in anything, you can find the answer.
Yeah, it's funny. Kimbo Slice, one time, I got him on a conference call, and I got to ask him a question. I said, what's your ultimate goal in your sport? And he goes, you know, something to the effect of, you know, I'd be lying if I didn't say, you know, I wasn't doing it for the money, you know, because it's all about the paper.
Yeah. Yeah, he's honest. Cool, man. Well,
anyway,
I got to get rolling. Thank you for your time.
Thanks for coming on. And we definitely appreciate it. And we'll keep our eye out for Kamal. And good luck.
Cool, thank you. Have a great afternoon, a great evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Tony, you still with us?
I'm still with you, man. I haven't been feeling too well the last few days, so
I
didn't have much in the tank tonight.
That's okay, man. You were a good listener.
Yeah.
Sure, you were there. You were so quiet.
I was there, you know, listening to everything, and it was hard because there was multiple guys on, you know. It's hard for, you know, another person to get involved, especially for someone that doesn't have a big background in the sport.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, next week I'll promise we'll get some boxes on and you can
do
multiple questions while I sit there and listen. I need to get educated on boxing again anyway, right? I got a fight coming up. But anyway, until next week, folks, we got to sign off. We got about 30 seconds left to go. Adios for the week. Next week will be premium or we won't be at all. So take that. Surprise, surprise. We'll see you.
All right. Till next week, man.
Thanks, Shania.
Later.